Live from the 607, it's the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking everything going on in the world of sports. Join in the conversation on social media with the hashtag ODPH, because here we go. Welcome to an all-new edition of the ODPH Podcast. What's happening, everybody? My name is Ken M. Joining me in studio, as always, you know him. He's the co-host. His name is Padawan J.
Let me talk to you.
Yeah, and boy, do we have some things to talk about in the land of sports. It's actually been a little quiet week.
A little bit.
In per se, but there's a few big events going on, so obviously the ODPH panel has something to say about it. But after the show, Pad, where does everybody go?
ODPHpodcast.com.
Right on. We like continuing those conversations on the social media accounts, and boom, we have all our links right there on the front page. Also have a link to the T Public store, where you never know when a sale is going to be dropping, so it never hurts to pop in there. If you want to get some ODPH swag, it's the best time to go do that. Also, check out the Patreon link. Shout out to all our amazing patrons, one tier, $2 a month. Check out the blog section. We're always dropping some reviews left and right. The Classifieds, which has friends of the show, such as 3FM Podcast, Dragon Master Games, Nerd Initiative, many, many more. The directory. Pat, how many providers are we on?
We are on 377,858.
Sounds about right to me. I don't question him because he is a statistician to the stars. Also, while you're at the website, check out the music section. We have some great musician friends that loan us their music to play on the show each and every week. So shout out to Brian Wolf and the Howlers. He's got some big things going on in Austin there. I've been trying to keep track of. He's booking gigs left and right. So if you're in the Austin, Texas area, go check him out. Also, second suitor, Tom Jolu. Man, talk about somebody putting in a lot of work lately. You can always hear him on Nerd Initiative's Turn a Page. He is the opening theme song for that. But he's doing a lot of shows as well. Shout out to Robots, Floodlands, many, many more. Basically, if it's anything and everything, it is the ODPH. You can find it at ODPHpodcast.com. And if you use hashtags, well, why don't you use the hashtag ODPHpod? Kicking off this edition of the show, the NFL is still in full off-season swing.
Uh-huh.
And there were some moves that we have to recap that happened since the last show. So, Pat, let's get into it.
Yeah, of course, the first and probably biggest story of the past week has been Justin Fields, as we predicted, would not be starting this season with the Chicago Bears. He was traded on Friday or Saturday. I forget which it was. But he was traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a 2025 conditional pick. Right now, it is a sixth round pick, but it has the potential, whatever the circumstances are, if they meet those requirements, it will turn into a fourth round pick.
Well, this was a big domino that we were waiting to see fall.
Uh-huh.
And obviously, if you know what is going on with the Bears organization, they do have the number one pick for this year's draft.
They do.
There is a lot of teams in love with Caleb Williams from USC.
Uh-huh.
And the Bears obviously have declared their intentions with this move.
Yep.
Justin Fields has been in the league for a couple seasons now, the 11th overall pick, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so, yes.
And has shown flashes of potentially greatness, albeit, though, the talent he has had around him, in my opinion, has not been up to the level.
Yes.
And he has had to deal with a few coaching carousels, if you will.
Yes.
To put it mildly.
Yes.
So it's very hard to judge how he will be as a pro. And obviously, with the new direction Chicago wants to take, all signs were pointing that they were going to make this move.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest question mark was going to be, where was the landing spot going to be?
Right.
And this one is a little puzzling to a certain degree, but it's not, because Pittsburgh had a need for a quarterback.
Yep.
But they did get Russell Wilson from Denver.
Yep.
Albeit, though, his contract, Denver is paying the majority of.
Well, he's getting paid twice. He's getting paid the $37 or $39 million, whatever it is, from Denver. And then Pittsburgh's giving him the $1 million.
Right.
So he's technically getting two paychecks into his bank account this year. But no, I mean, we knew he was going to get traded at some point, and it was just a matter of when. I just thought it was hysterical that in every speculation post and article and blog and video and TikTok, you name it, everyone was predicting what team he would go to and for what.
Mm-hmm.
And while I won't sit here and say I read every single piece of media on the internet speculating where Justin Fields would go, I saw a few of them, though.
Sure.
And from the ones I remember, boy, a lot of you overshot the expectations of what they'd get for him by about 250%.
Mm-hmm.
Christ, only a conditional sixth, and it turns into a fourth if it meets certain criteria. Again, we don't know what those are. Usually in the NFL, it's all they play X number of snaps, or they, you know, you make the playoffs, or you don't make the playoffs. So we don't know what that is, so time will tell. But at the same time, I know I had one friend ask me, well, why did he go to Pittsburgh? Well, because if you go to Steelers.com, they don't have a depth chart up right now. You know, they won't have one up until like the first week of training camp.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to ESPN.com, they currently have two quarterbacks on their depth chart right now. Russell Wilson, and then before Justin Fields was traded, nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So not an ideal situation, you know, if you go into the season with just one starting quarterback, with one quarterback on your roster. God forbid something happens to Russ and he goes down hurt, and all of a sudden you're putting in one of your wide receivers as your quarterback, because, hey, they quarterbacked back in high school. That might still be able to work. You know, so it's a blanket in case something happens to Russell. It's also a good building block, because the thing that should be pointed out with Fields is he's under contract for one more guaranteed year, but then the club has the fifth year option. So even if this whole Russell Wilson thing doesn't work out and it's a one and done and he leaves or retires or what have you, they don't have to sit there and play the, oh crap, you know, we're back at square one. We just wasted a whole year and really didn't do anything to help ourselves. They've got Justin Fields sitting in the background. I'm sure he'll see some playing time during the season, maybe in some garbage minutes, you know, or if the Steelers are getting blown out and they want to pull the starters, he might get in some play time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same token, he's learning from behind Russell Wilson, which, say what you will about the rumored stuff in the locker room and how players may or may not like him aside, Russell Wilson's still a pretty good player to learn behind, in my opinion. And also, he's got Mike Tomlin there, who was one of the greater offensive minds in the NFL. And let's not forget, has never had a losing season in his entire NFL career. You got to be doing something right if you can say that. So for Fields, it's a good development spot for him.
I love the fact you brought up about Tomlin, because that was the key selling point for Fields to go.
I think so.
In fact, the rumors were coming out about that was his preferred destination with the Steelers.
Sure.
Because why? Stability.
Yeah.
And say what you will about the Steelers, they run a top-level organization.
How many players, star or otherwise, have they lost? And it's not been an, oh shit, what are we going to do? We got to find somebody to replace him. We got to go out and make a big free agent signing. We got to get a home run or a grand slam in the draft. No, it's just, hey, you know what? Next man up. You know, they lost Plaxico Burress all those years ago. Next man stood up. You know, Jerome Bettis retired after his stellar career. Next man up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Heath Miller was the security blanket in Pittsburgh for all of those years. Next man up.
Oh, yeah. They have been so smart with how they draft.
Yeah.
That when they occasionally misfire.
Sure.
And you can argue Kenny Pickett was. You can make that argument.
Yeah.
They bounce back rather quickly, because the one thing this organization does better than arguably everybody else is they assess the situation. They never hit the panic button.
Right.
And they find something to get at least on the road to where they want to fill in the spot.
And even the guys they fill in, like you said, you know, not every one of them's a home run,
mm-hmm.
but more often than not, they're pretty successful to a degree.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, they were very smart about drafting Najee Harris.
Yep.
He is a very solid running back. Well,
and then also, what was it? The Le'Veon Bell. They let Le'Veon Bell go, and everyone's like, what the hell are they going to do? Le'Veon Bell was such a dynamic part of their offense. If I'm not mistaken, it was like James Conner who stepped up and came out of nowhere and showed everybody.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing they have, and they're very smart in their draft picks. Like I say, if they have to lose a player for whatever reason, they usually bounce back rather quickly. And that's something that this organization is doing with Fields is – they knew they had to fill in the quarterback position.
Yep.
Honestly, and we have to be right down the middle, like we're on Wrestling Night Live with this.
Sure.
We don't know what we're getting with Russell Wilson.
You really don't. I mean, he had a decent season statistically last year, but it wasn't good on the field.
Right. See, this year obviously is a make or break year for him.
Yeah. He's 35 years old. His birthday is on November 29th, so he will turn 36 midseason.
Well, the situation, like it unfolds, is in Denver, you had no weapons.
That is true.
You had nothing there. Let's be honest. That's why Denver was not exactly a factor in the AFC West, even with the great Sean Payton as the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
So now you go to Pittsburgh. You have Harris and Warren in the backfield. You have George Pickens, who's been waiting for a quarterback to get him the ball.
Uh-huh.
Van Jefferson, who is a solid number two. He doesn't make a lot of headlines.
Yeah.
He's more of a three, but he can play the role of a two.
Yeah.
He just needs to get the ball. And they have other talented wide receivers around them.
Oh,
just haven't seen them, because the problem is with Kenny Pickett there, Pickett was not the answer and unfortunately slowed this team down that you could key in on Harris.
Yeah.
And
his arm wouldn't scare you.
Right. You were never scared to play Pickett.
No.
Sorry. It is what it is. And obviously, Mike Tomlin and the organization knew this, and that's why they made the deal to make the move. They they gave it a try. It's not like
it's a no lose situation. Well, it can't be. It's a low risk. Because, listen, even if it doesn't work, you're only paying him 1 year for $1 million.
Right.
You're not hedging the farm in the next 5 years of your franchise, hoping he has a resurgence to when he made it to two Super Bowls.
Exactly. That's the beauty of this deal.
And plus, the thing with Russ is he doesn't have to be, you know, the be-all, end-all, I got to be the guy to win the games.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's got a defense on his side now that isn't necessarily the vaunted Iron Curtain Steelers defense from the 70s.
Sure.
But they're still pretty goddamn good. I mean, looking at the depth chart, is he? Yep, TJ Watt's still there. Is TJ Watt still a beast? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of what he's walking into now, is they have ways to pull this off.
Yeah.
They have a lot of upside to this. And if they're smart about it, which the Steelers are, this has the potential to be something really big.
Yeah.
And for anybody that's complaining about Fields going there and Chicago didn't get enough, I honestly will applaud.
It's about all you're going to get for him.
I'll applaud to the Bears about this. They could have gotten a lot more if they wanted to send him somewhere else.
Sure.
And there's allegedly 4 or 5 teams involved. And sure, we could sit here and play armchair analyst and figure this out. But Fields wanted to go to the Steelers. He had given Chicago all he had.
Yep.
The Bears granted him the wish, and mean almost to the fault of the organization.
Uh-huh.
But I will applaud him if this is true, that this is where Fields wanted to go and they granted his wish, because they didn't have to.
No, they didn't.
They could have honestly sent him anywhere else, probably get some better draft picks and improve their situation. That is showing how much they're relying on Caleb Williams to be the guy. And I will be honest with you.
Good luck, kid.
I don't know.
I mean, there's some decent pieces there now because, let's face it, he will start if he gets drafted by Chicago. I'm not ruling out the possibility of them taking someone else or a potentially Eli Manning part two,
mm-hmm.
if you remember his draft years ago. But, I mean, because Tyson Bagnett is current listed starter for Chicago. Who? Exactly. And their second is Brett Rifian, who at least I've heard of but doesn't strike fear mm-hmm. to me whatsoever. But at least offensively, they've got some weapons now. You know, DeAndre Swift they acquired this offseason, as we mentioned. Khalil Herbert's still there. DJ Moore, who they got last year, is still up there. And we will mention it here in a little bit, a minute. But to tease the lead, they also acquired Keenan Allen, you know, who's still pretty goddamn good, if I do say so. And then they got Cole Kmet as their tight end, who's fairly good tight end. So they've got some weapons, but it's not going to be an instant success. Some Bears fans might hope it will be.
Mm-hmm. And that's where we have to wait and see. But I think for the Bears, listen, if they're all sold on Williams, this is the right move to make.
Uh-huh.
Their fan base, I mean, you have to be somewhat excited unless they decide to make a move with somebody.
Right.
Which, honestly, at this situation, I can't see them doing. I can't.
No, I think with the two guys I mentioned as their quarterbacks right now, there's no way they're trading out of
that spot. Only thing they could do is trade down or let Washington move up one. If they want to do something like that.
If there's something at like the 11th hour that all of a sudden they're not real gung-ho on Caleb Williams, I could see it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that when we get to the draft special. But yeah. I'm just saying right now on paper, I think this works out in Pittsburgh's favor completely.
Yeah.
100%. This is an A-plus grade for them.
Yeah.
For the Bears, I'm going to just be more leaning on the side of a B-plus.
Right now, the Bears are where the Atlanta Falcons were a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've got to rip this thing down to the studs.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking like stud you know, players like studs as in building materials.
Right. But I mean, the fact that they went out, they got Keenan Allen.
Yeah, they got Keenan Allen, who we'll just say now. They acquired him from the Chargers in exchange for a 2024 fourth round pick. Good spot for him. You know, he's clearly like, it's like a 1-1A between him and DJ Moore.
Well, I'd give it to Allen. The only thing about Allen is very good about yards.
Yes.
Red zone production, which, listen, it's not his fault.
Right.
Unfortunately, he never really finds the end zone, but he will get the yards for him.
Oh, yeah.
And I think especially for getting a rookie quarterback in, bringing in Allen helps out a lot more than just having DJ Moore there. So, I mean, that's something big, too. DeAndre Swift is there as well. So, you know, Chicago is making some moves. And listen, if you're a fan of them, that's got to be a big move for you.
I mean, listen, in that division, though, you have to. Because let's not forget, the Detroit Lions won that division, and they're not getting any worse.
No, in fact, they're improving. They are making some moves as well, too. Which is great to see. Because the more parity that is in the league is great, unless you're in the AFC East.
Then we got to mention, we alluded to last week, Jerry Jeudy got traded from the Denver Broncos to the Cleveland Browns. Well, Cleveland is clearly invested in his future for the, at least the foreseeable future, because they re-signed him to a 3-year contract extension.
Oh, boy. How much?
I will look that up. I did not see that reported.
Okay. I mean, if they signed him for an extension, that's fine. I would just say I hope it's nothing super crazy, because unless they get some honest production out of him.
Which is needed at this point if he's going to talk the talk.
Well, that's what I say. He talks a lot, and coming into the situation where he has a chance to really flourish now.
Oh, Jesus Christ, I see the numbers.
But
3-year, $58 million contract, including $41 million guaranteed, an average salary of $19.3 million. He will earn a base salary of $12,987,000 and a cap hit of that same number. Nothing else listed in specifics of, like, you know, bonuses or anything like that. So for right now, all we know, it is a 3-year, $58 million extension. That is overpaying.
That is overpaying. Sorry, it is what it is. Jeudy has not exactly earned that kind of money just yet.
He likes to talk the talk and say that I'm him.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm looking at the numbers from last year. 54 catches, 758 yards. 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, he was injured for a few games, though, too. But still.
Admittedly, if you're going to talk the talk and be like, yo, I'm the guy. You know, I'm him. I'm it. You know, you got to back it up with some better numbers.
Unless I'm mistaken, and if I am wrong, hashtag ODPHpod, didn't Stephen Smith call him out? Not Stephen A. Smith. Or Steve Smith.
Steve Smith Sr.
Yes.
Yes, he did in some capacity, yes.
Yeah, that's why I say if you're getting called out like that and you don't produce. Buyer beware. That is all I'm going to say with this deal. I mean, I know Cleveland's trying to make some moves and give their quarterback some kind of weapons. I don't know if I love this deal, though. I think it is overpaying.
Right.
Just jumping out there. It's just for the amount of headaches and you're going to get on that sideline, I think what he needs to do is just shut up and ball. And yeah. I think if Jeudy does that, he'll be fine. But I think if he starts cutting those interviews again where he's saying, I'm him and, you know, talking like he is the greatest wide receiver of all time, then we got a problem.
Yeah, I pulled up an article. This is on CBS.com, dated October 19th of last year. And this was during a Denver Broncos, Kansas City Chiefs game where this took place. This was on NFL Network was there, and Steve Smith Sr. was there. Of course, the great Steve Smith Sr., who back on his podcast, he'd called Jerry Jeudy a jag or just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Jerry Jeudy took exception to it. But Steve went on to say, if you haven't seen the clip, quote, I'm sorry I said you were a jag, just a guy who is an average wide receiver they used a first round pick on that isn't doing anything. I hope today you actually show up in a way that you haven't shown up in the last couple of years since they drafted you. So if you ever got a problem with Agent 89, I'm sorry for saying that you're an average wide receiver that they will eventually move on from. When teams call me to ask if they should trade for you, I will say no. Don't trade for Jerry Jeudy because he is mentally unable to handle constructive criticism. Who watch specifically if you can be a wide receiver, he's a tier 3, close quote. If you watch the clip, Steve did try to like have a discussion with him like, hey, here's what I was trying to say. Here's where I was coming from. Jerry Jeudy wanted none of it and uttered a phrase towards Steve Smith Sr. That neither you nor I can utter.
Correct.
And for listeners at home, that should get you the gist of what the word was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not going to repeat that, obviously.
And if you're curious, I looked up the stat. That game was on Sunday, October 29th, against Kansas City Chiefs, where the Denver Broncos won by a final score of 24-9. In case you're curious what Jerry Jeudy did, rushing, absolutely nothing. But receiving, 2 catches on 6 targets for 50 yards and 1 touchdown.
Yeah.
He's the guy, though.
Oh, Cleveland. I don't know. Sometimes their moves really puzzle me.
Yeah.
This is one for that amount of money.
I talked to a guy today, you and I both know, who is a diehard Cleveland Browns fan.
Yep.
He's from our area, but his parents grew up in the Cleveland area.
Right.
And as a result, he is a Cleveland Browns fan. I asked him what he thought about this today, and I didn't even get the full question out. He goes, man, I'm not even happy about that.
Yeah,
well, and I can't say I blame him.
You can't. I mean, the Browns are on the cusp of being a legit Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
I mean, they're playoff ready now, but...
They get their quarterback situation figured out.
Right. That's the only thing that's been holding them back and a couple key injuries.
Nick Chubb, still good. Amari Cooper, he's got some flashes left.
Right.
Elijah Moore, not bad. Njoku, he's pretty good.
He's very solid.
That defense, scary.
Yeah.
Is Myles Garrett still there? Yep.
They just need a quarterback that can really elevate that team. And I'm sorry, Deshaun Watson, I don't see it in him.
No, I don't either, especially considering, you know, he's played a full season in the 2 years he's been there.
Mm-hmm.
He missed the first half of his first season because of the obvious suspension.
Yeah.
And then he missed the half of last year because of an injury, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
So, in essence, he's played one full season in 2 years, and what have the Browns got to show for it?
Exactly. So, like I say, this move, very puzzling. I don't think this was a need by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But we'll have to kind of wait to see how it plays out.
Then the shocker of all shockers today is that wide receiver Mike Williams is going to sign with the New York Jets for a 1-year, $15 million deal.
Boy. I don't know. This one is really shocking to me.
I mean, I get it to a degree, you know, because Rodgers is coming back. Obviously, that's not a bad guy to catch a ball from. They've got Breece Hall, who's the decent running back there. Garrett Wilson, I mean, obviously, he's better than Garrett Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's an obvious target for Rodgers there because the other wide receivers he's got there, this is according to the depth chart on ESPN.com. Alan Lazard, better than him. Malik Taylor, better than him. Jason Brownlee, he's better than him. And Lance McCutcheon, better than him. You know, so... Clear number one, clear guy for Rodgers to throw to, but that's assuming Rodgers comes back a full 100% or back to what he was in his MVP years after the injury. The way I see this is the Jets going for broke, which going to be rough in that division to do because Miami's played very well. You know, if they repeat their success, Buffalo's obviously still there. Patriots or the Patriots, you never know what's going to happen when they play each other because, hey, in division. But then just the rest of the AFC. You know, you've got the teams in the AFC North, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Pittsburgh. Can't rule Pittsburgh out.
Mm-hmm.
You got the South with Houston, Jacksonville, you never know. Indy, you never know with next year. And then you got the West with, you know, Kansas City, obviously, the Raiders, hey, you never know. And then you got the Chargers who've got Harbaugh coming in for the first year. I get what they're doing. I'm just not entirely sure it's going to work.
With Mike Williams, he is somebody that has all the potential in the world, and just unfortunately it hasn't clicked.
Unfortunately, it's San Diego, Los Angeles.
He's had a lot of injuries, too. Which,
that is true.
Which maybe a new scenery would help.
It could be.
I don't know, but I think with the Jets, it's a smart move for them.
Yeah.
And especially if the contract is very incentive-laced.
Yeah,
I imagine. That's probably a smarter move, and I think for Aaron Rodgers, this is a great wide receiver for him.
Yeah.
Williams is very tall. He can jump up and go get a ball.
Yeah.
So this will help out in that aspect.
I mean, if he can get back to his 2021 year where he caught 76 balls for 1,146 yards, the Jets will take that all damn day.
Well, exactly. I mean, I think he'll be a solid number two, I think, at this age.
Yeah.
Behind Wilson, which is fine.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. He just needs to produce on a consistent basis. That's the only thing with him that he hasn't been able to do. But then again, if you take a look at the Chargers offense, it was loaded.
Uh-huh.
So trying to get a ball in that situation, very difficult.
This is true.
So now with the Jets as is right now and saying Rodgers comes back 100%,
right.
He has his best options to get the full opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think with it being incentive-laced, I think you're going to see, you know, maybe the change of scenery is going to help. I mean, I'm not penciling him in to have like the all-star or all-pro season, but
I could see him getting maybe comeback player of the year.
He has a potential for it. I would say a high upside about that. Like percentage-wise, I'll say of 60%.
Sure. I mean, to me, though, this just screams Aaron Rodgers is actually the GM of that team.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we all knew he was going there.
Yeah.
The minute he signed there and he started getting all former players from Green Bay, you knew he had some stake in this. And obviously the Jets want to cater to their number one quarterback. And if Rodgers can give you a flashes of the old Rodgers, it's well worth it. If he unfortunately cannot at his age, because Father Time finds everybody.
This is true.
We don't know what we're going to get out of him.
Yeah.
So we'll have to kind of wait and see on that.
And then the New Orleans Saints signed defensive end Chase Young to a one-year, $13 million fully guaranteed deal.
I don't know if I like that one either.
I mean, it makes sense from the aspect of obviously the Saints defense needs a whole ton of work.
Right.
You know, so you Cameron Jordan's still there. You've got Tyrann Mathieu signed in the offseason, or he signed the extension, whatever it was. So you got Honey Badger still there. Marshawn Lattimore's still there. So they're slowly building together some pieces there on the defense, maybe get a couple guys in the draft. Listen, it's the NFC South. It's the worst division in the entire NFL. Somebody has to win that fucking division, and it could give them the albeit slight advantage to do that.
Somebody's got to win, but Young has been known not to be 100% on plays at times.
Yeah, that's true.
Or allegedly, I'll put the allegedly by it. But I know that was a rumored strike against him.
Right.
So to see what he does here, I mean, obviously it's much more similar to the situation in Washington.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a lot of great pieces around him. So if he's really going to go back to an all-pro status, this would be the time to do it.
The only thing that's concerning is there was a report today that came out from Adam Schefter, and I'm reading from an article on ESPN.com. Says, quote, Saints defensive end Chase Young is expected to miss part of training camp after undergoing a neck procedure, a source told ESPN's Adam Schefter on Tuesday. Young signed a one-year deal worth a guaranteed $13 million following his visit with the Saints on Monday. The Saints were among the teams aware of the neck issue and felt comfortable moving ahead with the signing, a source told Schefter. Young missed the Washington Commanders season opener last season because of a neck stinger sustained in the first preseason game. While Young was initially expected to delay his return until week three, he played the next week and did not miss another game in 2023, close quote.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait and see.
Something to keep an eye out
for. Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see him bounce back and get back to the form that we all thought we were going to see him coming out of college.
Yeah.
And like I say, it's just the allegedly is there. It's just, I mean, it's tough to say, but you know, it's the problem when you have somebody that comes out. You have to keep him motivated. Washington at the time, I mean, it's very tough to have motivation, you know, under the former regime.
Yeah.
So we'll just kind of put it out there. But if Young wants to bounce back, it's a smart move to bounce back.
Yeah. And then lastly, certainly not leastly, San Francisco lost out on a draft pick. So reading from an article on CBS.com says, quote, the San Francisco 49ers are known as the kings of the compensatory pick, and they racked up several again this year. They, along with the Los Angeles Rams, received a league-high 5 additional draft picks earlier this month and were the only team that received multiple compensatory picks in the third and fourth rounds. However, a couple of their draft picks have reportedly been demoted. The 49ers will forfeit their original fifth-round selection next year, 2025, and have their 2024 fourth-round selection in the upcoming draft, the 131st pick, move behind the compensatory picks to the end of that round. So that would be the 135th pick. The NFL released a statement on why this happened. Quote, the action resulted from a league review that found administrative payroll accounting errors at the close of the 2022 league year that resulted in a misreporting of the club's cumulative player compensation. The NFL determined that the club would have remained under the salary cap at all times, regardless of the error, and there was no intent to circumvent the cap, close quote.
Interesting.
What the fuck you doing, San Francisco? For the amount of payroll and salary cap and financial stuff you do every day, you're fudging numbers.
I'm shocked at this because
asterisk their whole season.
Yeah. Oh man, now I got questions. I got real questions. I don't want to think of this because I always say John Lynch, I think, is probably the best GM in football right now.
It was.
But man, I got thoughts on this. Crazy to think that this has already been the second week of free agency, pretty much.
Like, good Lord.
But, you know, the biggest domino fell, so we have a lot to talk about with that. So definitely hit us up on that hashtag, ODPHPod. Thoughts on Justin Fields going to Pittsburgh? San Francisco making a clerical error?
Yeah.
Can I say that?
You can.
Oh, and then the other moves going on in the league. How is your team shaping up? A lot of teams are bolstering the rosters. Some are looking very depleted. And obviously, it's getting closer and closer to the NFL draft time. So we're getting a sense of what teams are doing. So definitely hit us up. Let us know what you're thinking. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You ever wondered what comics Mark from Vale of Mai is into? What Zach from Left Behind's favorite MCU movies are? Well, Metalcore Nerds is the show for you. My name is Sean Mott, and here at Metalcore Nerds, we cover the latest things in pop culture, whether it be Star Wars, Marvel, DC, AEW, and everything else in between. You can listen to the show every Monday on Adobe Howl at 7 p.m. Eastern, or find it anywhere you find podcasts after it debuts on the radio station.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast, and a lot of moving and shaking is going on in the land of World Wrestling Entertainment as the road to WrestleMania gets a little more clear.
Yeah.
This past week, we were graced with a rock concert.
That was certainly something.
On Saturday or Friday night for SmackDown, The Rock went back to the full rock heel mode, singing in Memphis.
Coming out to his old Hollywood Rock theme song, or at least a remix of it.
Yeah, how you feeling about that, Pat?
I love the music coming back. I got psyched for that because, as I've said before on the show, but if you're new to the show, this is the first time you're hearing it, I did not start watching pro wrestling until WrestleMania 30.
Mm-hmm.
I was aware of it because I grew up in the era where, you know, Stone Cold and NWO and all that was going on. Like, I didn't watch, but I knew they were a thing.
Yeah,
because everyone had the shirts at school. So I never got to see or hear the Hollywood Rock stuff live. So to see it and hear it, for me, I'm pretty psyched about it.
It's a fantastic time. If you grew up in that era watching, and obviously Dwayne The Rock Johnson is a staple of that time period.
Absolutely.
Hollywood's biggest action star right now.
Uh-huh.
So to see him come back to WWE and get back in the form, it's bringing a lot of new eyes to the product and a lot that are getting reintroduced to what really made him stand out as such a superstar in that time.
And you can argue that the product has not been hotter since those Attitude Era days. I mean, they've got how many TV sellouts and all the eyes on the ratings and all that? Good Lord.
It goes back to the simple format of Endeavor TKO.
Uh-huh.
And they let Triple H have total creative control. He understands the temp in the room better than anybody. And he has been working with The Rock, who is a TKO board member, about building this WrestleMania into arguably the greatest of all time thus far.
It's shaping up to be.
It's shaping up there, and allowing this kind of freedom to do
is
exciting for fans, and everybody is tuning in. There's a buzz around WWE shows, and like you alluded to, at live shows, that they're on a consecutive sellout streak, even in areas that have never done really well before.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the crowd last night. That was I believe it was NC State.
Yeah,
the university. That was one of the hottest crowds I've seen for a television show. I'm not talking pay per view because obviously, if we're talking pay per view, you got to go back to Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
But for a TV crowd, because we've certainly watched weeks where you could hear a pin drop during a wrestling match that they just did not care.
Yeah.
But that crowd last night on Monday Night Raw, holy shit.
Yeah.
From the start, was hot.
Well, they got up for it because obviously coming off that promo and what was going on with SmackDown, as we do have a little clarification about what is going on with the U.S. title, that's the biggest thing to take home.
Yeah.
Because it has been officially announced that Logan Paul will be defending his belt against not only Randy Orton, but who, Pat?
Kevin Owens.
Yes. How you feeling about that match?
Love that match. Triple threat, always good, especially when you got Randy and Kevin Owens involved in it. I'm not sure how I feel about the stunner into the RKO they did on SmackDown last week. It was awesome, but it was also goofy at the same time. But no, Logan is clearly, say what you will about him outside the ring and in his personal business.
Mm-hmm.
In-ring work, he's fantastic. You know, he's always put on a good match. I can't think of one match I saw him perform in and went, that really didn't do it for me.
Yeah.
You know, certainly some were better than others, but they've all been enjoyable as hell. Randy always puts on a good match, no matter who he's with. And then Kevin Owens, I've always enjoyed. You know, I've always liked his stuff from the time of his NXT days and when he debuted on the main roster, powerbombing Cena on Monday Night Raw in July, what was it 2015, 2016, whatever it was. You know, they're three really great workers, and I feel like they'll have a lot of great chemistry together, and the match will be incredible.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for it, too. I mean, this makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens is somebody you can plug and play in anywhere.
Yeah.
And I he's kind of in this weird flux situation where he doesn't have a big storyline going on right now.
Right.
But it makes sense for him to be involved. But
it goes back to what we always say with Kevin Owens. Even if he's not in the main picture, he's not going for the big belt. He's always featured,
mm-hmm.
you know, in some capacity. He's always on TV.
Exactly. And that's what you want to be. You know, if you're a pro wrestler on TV, like or in any brand. If you're on a TV show, you're doing well.
Yeah. The other match that got confirmed, I don't remember if it was Friday or Monday, but a little peek behind the curtain. Every so often on a WrestleMania, you get brothers facing each other.
Mm-hmm.
You had Owen and Bret Hart face each other years ago. Certainly have had others over the years. That's the only one that comes to mind at the moment. But this year, WrestleMania 40, Jimmy versus Jey Uso.
Yes, indeed.
Does Rikishi special guest referee? Because Lord knows he wants in on this whole story in the worst way possible.
Yes, he does.
And good Lord. The man said he doesn't think the story will end for another 3 years.
Well,
we get it, Rikishi. You want in on the story.
Well, that's the whole thing. The Bloodline storyline has arguably been the greatest storyline in pro wrestling. Arguably.
It's getting close to jumping the shark for me, though, I will say.
Well, that's the whole thing now, is since Roman Reigns has created the Bloodline, and you've seen now the eventual breakup of said Bloodline,
yep.
This is a situation that everything is running its course.
Uh-huh.
And unless there's a new dynamic added into said match,
yeah,
you kind of think it has to end here. But this has been something that both Jimmy and Jey have wanted to do for years. They've gone on record in previous interviews and said they'd love to face each other one time at WrestleMania just because of reasons.
Right.
But they actually have a great storyline behind this. Jey Uso has broken out on his own. He's arguably the second biggest face on Monday Night Raw behind Cody Rhodes.
Yeah.
Without question. Look at the crowd reaction if you want proof.
Facts.
Jimmy has reinvented himself.
Jimmy needs a better theme song. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, he does.
Jay's is incredible. Mm-hmm. And I cannot wait to see whatever the crowd ends up being at WrestleMania, whatever night he's on.
Oh, I guarantee you.
Every single goddamn person in that place is going to be doing, you know, the hand motion.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be incredible.
I'm guaranteeing you they're going to open night one.
That could be.
They're going to open night one. Maybe night two.
Yeah,
but they will be the opening match because that's going to get the crowd exploding. But with Jimmy doing his work as well, too. I mean, Jimmy has formed his own unique character, which I love seeing because he's really kind of playing to the, you know, sniveling heel.
Yeah.
And it's been some fun interactions he's had. So this is making perfect sense. I love the fact it's officially announced. They've got a couple weeks to build it up even more, even though I don't think they need to.
Yeah, no, not really.
But there's some exciting things going on with that. And then, like you touched upon, I mean, Monday Night Raw, that's where we opened with Jey Uso in the ring.
Yeah.
But Monday Night Raw had a couple other big moments to talk about.
Holy shit.
Let's get into it.
So, obviously, on the heels, as we alluded to earlier, was after The Rock's scathing song he sang about Cody and the scathing things he said about Cody and his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Cody came out. People were asking Brandy on social media, a little peek behind the curtain, what she thought about the whole thing. And she said, I think if you pay attention to what Cody says, that says plenty enough for me.
Yeah.
Cody came out on the show and then proceeded to, oh boy, one of the better promos I've seen in quite some time,
mm-hmm.
Against The Rock, claiming, you know, listen, you haven't wrestled in a match in several years. When you show up, are you going to have that big Dwayne energy that, you know, you like to hype up? You know, are you going to be the guy a lot of us remember and have that same energy? Or are you going to have LDS, Little Dick Syndrome?
Yeah. Cody went right into Attitude Era with this. And for anybody that's questioning about the obscenities on promos and how Rock got clearance for it, well, I think they decided to let Cody have his own clearance as well.
Uh-huh.
I know that the allegedly's, that's not really pro for TV because you have to bleep out a lot.
Right. Which you see them doing whenever the crowd starts chanting, holy shit.
Yeah.
They start bleeping out the holy shit.
Yeah, but I think Cody really ran with it, and obviously to build up their feud, it's perfect.
Yeah.
And Cody needed this big promo.
Yeah, he did, especially after what The Rock said.
Yes.
On SmackDown, where like, alluding to paraphernalia and other sexual paraphernalia.
Yeah.
You know, and how he was a mistake and how he's going to beat him bloody with the weightlifting belt and then hand it to his mother and then sing Moana to his mother.
Yeah, no.
You know, like, if Cody would have come out in any other fashion on Monday and said anything else, it would have knocked him down several pegs.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. Cody had to come with it, and this was one of his better promos.
Yeah. What was it? He ended with saying, you might be the final boss. I really don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, come WrestleMania, who's going to win our tag match? You know, but I do know that you're not going to be the final boss. You're going to be Roman's side chick.
Yep.
Oh.
And then even with the Paul Heyman line, don't make me go Homelander on you.
Yeah, don't make me go Homelander and rip your throat out.
I'm taking my victory lap on this one.
You have been calling him the Rhodeslander for years.
For years. He's finally caught on to it. So anybody want to let Cody know about it, we would love to talk to him here on the ODPH.
Yeah.
Just about comics. I'll talk to him about that. No, but I thought they played into it very well. It set a high tempo for the night.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've been building in a few more matches for the six-pack tag team ladder match for WrestleMania.
Yeah, so the six-pack ladder match, it's a six-man ladder match for the Undisputed WWE Tag Team Championships.
Six teams,
thank you. But the Judgment Day in Finn Balor and Damian Priest are going to be defending their belt, and then we knew going into the week it was going to be against three teams from Monday Night Raw and two teams from Friday Night SmackDown. We found out the three teams from Monday Night Raw on this most recent episode of Monday Night Raw, the first of which, well, I think it was the first match on the show, was DIY, Johnny Gargano, and Tommaso Ciampa defeating the Creed brothers. So Gargano and Ciampa, who have been in WWE for like 10 years or something like that, finally making it onto making it onto WrestleMania. Super happy for them.
This was a fantastic match.
Yes, it was.
This might have been best match of the night. And anybody not sold on the Creed brothers,
uh-huh,
biggest upside in wrestling right now, in my opinion.
I agree wholeheartedly. And listen, some people might not be thrilled DIY's getting the future over the Creed brothers. The Creed brothers are so young. They've got so many more years ahead of them.
Here's the thing. If you put them in this match, I think they would have been exposed a little bit. And what I mean by this is, you touched upon, they're very young.
Yeah.
They don't exactly have the crowd behind them just yet because...
I want to see them do that, like, cannonball, whatever it is, finisher off a ladder as much as the next person. But
it doesn't make sense right now.
No.
And especially unless the crowd is buying into their characters, it would almost be too predictable they wouldn't win.
Yeah, yeah.
DIY getting there, Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, who have been killing it in NXT for years.
Literally carried that brand for how many years?
Uh-huh. Johnny was Mr. Takeover for the longest time under the 1.0 brand.
Yep.
So the fact that they got their moment in, this is a great thing for them.
Yeah.
I'm super excited to see what they do.
Yeah.
I'm not sure exactly, you know, do I think they're going to win the match? Probably not.
I mean, listen, probably not, but I'm holding out hope.
But listen, I'm just excited they got there too. Like,
just,
I say,
just don't let Candice LeRae near ringside for that match.
Oh, let her go.
Jesus.
I love the heel persona. The fact that she is just fully bought into this, I'm in. She is one of the best wrestlers they have on the roster, and now I think she's finally found her character.
Yeah.
And if you've never seen her work on the indies, like, she was killing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm hoping actually they get into WrestleMania, her and Indy Hartwell. I'm not sure how.
I get the feeling they might. You might still see something, because I think at this point the women's tag team belts are about the only thing on the main roster that aren't up for grabs at WrestleMania. I could still see something happening though.
Right, because I mean, I've heard rumors that Asuka hurt her knee.
Ooh.
I don't know. These are not confirmed.
It's just what you've read.
I've seen a couple sites, but I want to get more confirmation because if that is the case,
yeah,
I wouldn't doubt them doing like an open challenge.
Yeah, I could see it.
And you could have four teams get on there, because I think what's ultimately going to happen, if Asuka is good to go,
right,
it'd be her and Kairi Sane against Bianca Belair and Naomi.
I could see it.
I could see that happening as of right now, but
they have been doing that on the house show circuit, but in a six woman tag with Bayley getting added to Bianca and Naomi team, and then you got Damage Control on the other side.
Yeah,
so they've been doing that on the house shows.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait and see about that. I'm like I say, I hope Asuka's completely healthy, and you know, if she's ready to go. I mean, like, if they did an open challenge like they're doing for the men's titles, I'd be okay with that too.
The other two teams we learned, though, getting back to the six-pack ladder match, was you had Awesome Truth defeat Indusher, or stumble into defeating Indusher. So you've got R-Truth and Miz have qualified for WrestleMania.
No brainer there. Now, I think they're walking out with the titles. I don't think it's anything close.
And then lastly confirmed, it was after they defeated Alpha Academy, and specifically Otis and Akira Tozawa. Although admittedly, I would have liked to see Akira Tozawa and Otis get featured. Once I saw they were going up against this team, though, I'm like, yeah, okay, we know these guys are going to win. This was the most predictable one of the bunch.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Was the New Day. Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. I'm like, listen, I love me some Otis. I love me some Akira Tozawa. They're both hilarious. Mm-hmm. There's no way they're beating New Day.
Yeah. No, New Day obviously is ready for Mania.
Can you imagine, though, if they come out for this match and for the first time in how long has he been out? A while?
Oh, Big E.
Big E's at ringside with them. The pop. Because rumor is, and again, much like you with Asuka, nobody's told me anything. I have not saying this as a confirmation, but I have heard and I have read some rumors that he's close.
If he could, that would be amazing.
No, no, I'm not even saying he's got a wrestle.
No, but he just came out with
it. But if he's just there.
If his presence is there, that's enough.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to see it.
The pop would be, especially he does like the full intro he used to back when they were united a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Don't you dare be Sawa.
Yep.
Oh my God. The pop will be enormous.
It'll be insane.
Uh-huh.
I need this.
I do too.
So we'll have to wait to see about that. So the tag team picture is getting a little more in focus. I know they have to add a couple more teams from SmackDown.
Yep.
I fully see New British Strong Style in there.
I
keep blanking on their name.
Oh, yeah, I know. Officially. It's Pete Dunne and
Tyler Bate. I think they get in, and then I would not doubt I got to see who else is on that roster, because I was going to say, I can't remember.
LWO, maybe?
Santos Escobar's guys.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the one great thing about it, because like I say, we've only known about a couple teams, so they are going to be doing some other things this week as well. So. Yeah. Like I said, I kind of lose track about what's going on with SmackDown, because there's but that's a great thing.
They got a lot of stories going.
They got a lot of stories going on. So.
Yeah.
And then obviously the biggest one coming out of Monday Night Raw was Sami Zayn and Gunther.
Yes.
And a very, very fiery promo.
We had a contract signing and the table didn't get overturned. I was astounded.
I was shocked at that.
My fiance was watching and I'm sitting there going, all right, when are they going to flip the table here? She goes, what do you mean? I go, listen, it's a contract signing in pro wrestling. You could almost bet on the under, whatever the over-under is, for the amount of time that table's going to be planted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go, it's about the same success rate as a wrestling wedding. You know, they don't ever end well. But no, they had a great promo between the two with Gunther questioning whether he really had it in him. Mm-hmm. You know, doubting him a little bit. Sammy feeling a little bit of doubt himself because Chad Gable was kind of insinuating some things, and then Sammy went to confront him backstage and goes, what did you mean? What were you saying? And after a long back and forth, Chad Gable came out and said it. I don't think you can beat Gunther. And I know I'm not the only one, because in our group chat with Rich, I mentioned it to you, and I got some rocky vibes from that whole thing. They're very Paulie/Apollo Creed.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see it happening. And listen, they want to try overselling about Sammy getting the underdog story against Gunther. Yeah. That would make sense. I have a weird feeling, though.
Okay.
Chad Gable's getting in this match one way or another.
Could be.
And I wouldn't doubt. I'm going to say on a limb, as crazy as this might sound, Sammy gets hurt before he can do the match. And Gable has to come in.
See, I could see a scenario where Chad is at ringside with him, almost like a Pauly or like an Apollo Creed.
Mm-hmm.
And then he pulls off the win.
Yeah.
And everyone's happy. They're both celebrating the win. Ah, we knocked down the Gunther. He's no longer champ. And then Chad Gable almost does like a Randy Orton hoisted up, or like a Batista when he did the thumbs down.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he just picks up Sammy, dumps him on his back. Because you notice he went from like dressed in his singlet, whatever he was wearing on Monday nights, and pay-per-views, was in a suit and tie last night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a little bit of a demeanor change, which you could chalk up to, oh, he's just pissed off he didn't win. But I think they're slowly turning him heel.
Yeah. Well, it could happen. I mean, we got to wait and see about that. But
yeah.
A lot of exciting things happening, and I'm taking a look at the rest of the card for WrestleMania. I mean, how are we looking?
Looking pretty good. Of course, we got Seth freaking Rollins taking on Drew McIntyre for the World Heavyweight Championship. That will be going on night 2.
Great promo segment on Monday night as well.
Holy shit, yeah. Then you've obviously got the main event of night 2, which is going to be Roman Reigns defending his belt against Cody Rhodes. Listen, regardless of the, I love how they're playing this. Well, if you beat, if Cody, if you beat Rock and Roman on night one, there won't be any interference at ringside.
Mm-hmm.
Really? If you're buying that, I got a boat to sell you.
Yeah.
But some of the other matches we do know, these are all to be announced for what night they're taking place. Io Sky is taking on Bayley in a singles match for the WWE Women's Championship.
I got a feeling that's night one.
Probably. And then for in a singles match for the WWE Women's World Championship, Rhea Ripley is defending her belt against Becky Lynch.
Night two.
Probably. Then you've got Gunther taking on Sami Zayn for the Intercontinental Championship, like we mentioned. Then you've got the six-pack ladder match, as we alluded to. Then officially announced, I believe it was last week.
It was a Friday, yeah. Friday. We forgot about this.
In a singles match, AJ Styles taking on L.A. Knight.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
About time they did this official.
Yes.
Nothing wrong with this. Yeah. I still am kind of shocked that they went this route instead of making this for the U.S. title, but I'm not mad about it.
No, I'm not either. I expect this to be the middle portion of one of the Knights of Mania.
Mm-hmm. It's still a marquee match. Yeah.
And then obviously, as we alluded to, Jimmy and Jay are taking on each other, and then you've got the triple threat for the U.S. title.
A lot of great things happening from WWE programming this week, and obviously the road to WrestleMania is getting a little more clear, a few more matches to be added. But, man, they're loading the deck for Philly, which is only 2 weeks away.
Yeah,
how
crazy.
Insane is that?
Crazy.
So in the meantime, hit us up on that hashtag, #ODPagePod. What is your feelings about the current state of WrestleMania? Did you love the stuff you saw this weekend? Did you not? What do you think is going to wind up happening on the big night? Because we have a lot to talk about, a lot of programming on the way. And if you want even more pro wrestling content, make sure to check out every Thursday night, Eastern Standard Time, 8 p.m., Wrestling Night Live on Nerd Initiative YouTube and streaming services. That all said, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do not adjust your dial, or well, your phone, your watch, or whatever the heck you're using to listen to the awesome podcast you're currently listening to. I am the Duke of Nerds, Tyler Mack, and I am here to tell you that being a nerd can be a bit overwhelming, especially after 30. Life moves pretty fast in our nerd culture, and if you don't take the time to notice things, you miss out. That's why I'm here. As your Duke of Nerds, I am charged with educating, enlightening, and entertaining you on all things nerdy. I do it by running the 30 and Nerdy podcast. 30 and Nerdy is a Badcast Company production and currently playing wherever you cast your pod. Follow along each episode using the hashtag 30andNerdyPod. And check out what all is going on at 30andNerdyPodcast.com. Whether it's DC, Marvel, comics, or video games, I have got you covered. So tune in now. Cheers to you, nerds.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast. Actually, it's the last segment of the show. Time is flying by. So, Pat, what you got?
I got a couple things to talk about. First of which is obviously the local minute and looking at the standings for the Federal Prospects Hockey League. That is, of course, the league our local Binghamton Black Bears play in the Empire Division. Another week, Binghamton. Still in first place.
Let's ride.
In 45 games played, Binghamton has a record of 30 wins in regulation, 6 losses, 7 losses in either overtime or shootouts, no overtime wins, and 2 shootout wins. They have a total of 101 points. They are ahead of Motor City in second place, who has 85 points. Danbury in third place, who has 78 points. Elmira in fourth place, who has 52 points. And then Watertown in last place, who has 48 points. Should also note, we got a couple more teams in both the Empire and the Continental. That's the other division in the FPHL division that have qualified for the playoffs. So Binghamton has qualified, as we alluded to last week, but also Motor City, Danbury have qualified from the Empire division, or the Empire, yeah, the Empire division, and then from the Continental division, Columbus and Carolina have qualified. So we'll definitely keep an eye out for when the postseason starts and matchups and all that, but we are still in the midst of the regular season. Holy fucking Christ. I'm spoiling the lead here, folks. They had a couple games last week, the first of which was on Friday, March 15th, where they were, all three of these games were at home. First game was against the Mississippi Sea Wolves, where they won by the final score of 9-1.
Jeez.
They came back Saturday, 7:05 p.m. Eastern on March 16th, played those Mississippi Sea Wolves 10-0.
What?
I'm being what? Serious. 10-0.
Oh, my God.
Then they came back on Sunday at home against the Elmira River Sharks, won by the final score of 8-1. Is defense optional in this league?
Yeah, I was going to say, they put up, what, nearly 30 goals in three games.
Yes, they did. God damn.
What the hell, man?
That's insane. But looking ahead to their schedule, they have this upcoming week. They got, what is this, three games this upcoming weekend. One is at home. The other two are on the road. First of which is on Friday, March 22nd, 7 o'clock Eastern. They are at home against the Watertown Wolves. Then Saturday, March 23rd at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, they are on the road playing those same Watertown Wolves. And then Sunday, March 24th, they are at 7:05 p.m. Eastern. They are still on the road playing the Watertown Wolves. If you want to see them this weekend, though, it's a good opportunity to do so because they will not be home again until Friday, April 5th. So for more tickets, information, all that good stuff, BinghamtonBlackBears.com. Then we got to talk a little bit of college football because it was announced today by the folks over at ESPN that they're not losing the college football playoff anytime soon.
Hmm.
They have signed or agreed to a deal with the college football playoff for a 6-year, $7.8 billion contract that they will be the sole media rights holder of the event through the 2031-2032 season.
College football's big business, folks.
Yes, it is.
Good. That's a hell of a deal. Lord. Jeez.
That's insane.
It's wild. It's wild to think it's in the billions for college, but it is.
It is. Then we can talk a little bit of baseball because one of the big free agents that was still sitting on the market, even though some teams were interested, finally went off the market, and that is Blake Snell.
Oh.
The reigning Cy Young Award winner in the National League who was with San Diego last year. Not going too far, though. He's going up the interstate a little bit from San Diego to San Francisco because he signed a 2-year, $62 million contract with the San Francisco Giants on Monday. There is an opt-out after the first season, according to, I know, John Heyman and Jeff Passan have both reported it, was linked to teams such as the Houston Astros, such as the New York Yankees, although the two teams I mentioned were not willing to go above $30 million a year,
mm-hmm.
to which I say, yeah, good. I don't want to pay a dude $30 million, and then he opts out after 1 year.
Yeah, this... I mean, we knew he was going to get paid somewhere. The Giants, I think, overpaid, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, and, although, listen, it's an arms race in that division between them and the Dodgers.
Right. I mean, that's the only thing. So they played that factor. I don't think there was ever any chance he was coming east.
No.
I really don't.
No.
Even with the Yankees' alleged troubles with Garrett Cole,
I don't think there's anything to that. I take – because it's inflammation with his arm. He said he just tried to do too much too quickly, which, hey – shit happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, the thing, getting back to Blake Snell, goes to show Scott Boras had a terrible offseason for him. For those of you who don't know, Scott Boras is one of the biggest baseball agents in Major League Baseball. If you're not a baseball fan and you're an NFL fan, think of Drew Rosenhaus.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Drew Rosenhaus. I don't know any real big name other than Rich Paul in the NBA, but he's a whoever the biggest agent in the NBA is. He's kind of like that in the NBA. But no, Boras had a terrible offseason because three of his clients wanted massive contracts and none of them got it. Cody Bellinger was reportedly looking for a 12-year, $264 million deal. He got three years for $80 million with the Chicago Cubs. Matt Chapman was looking for a 6-year, $150 million deal. He got 3 years for $54 million. And then Blake Snell was looking for a 7-year, $200 million, although I heard higher in some aspects, but regardless. And as we mentioned too, he got 2 years for $62 million. Not a good offseason for Scott Boras. Although, hey, it'll be a good offseason next year because all three of those guys got opt-outs after one fucking year.
Yeah.
Also, he's got Juan Soto as an agent, so we'll see.
Baseball economics, folks.
Yep, yep.
It's something.
Yeah, and then let's have done something happy for baseball. Article on MajorLeagueBaseball.com yesterday title gave the description of, or the headline, Major League Baseball Players Rank the Best Road Cities.
Okay.
So this is, this says, during spring training, MLB.com beat writers surveyed their clubhouses, asking players for their opinion on a range of topics. Well over 100 players participated. In exchange for anonymity, in the lead-up to opening day, MLB.com is publishing a series of stories based on the results of that survey. So the first one they put out is, what's your favorite road city? So these are the top five cities they mentioned, and I will read these 5-1. Number five, now the thing we should mention too, is they didn't have to specify which stadium it is in the case of multiple teams in that city. So like a New York, like a Chicago, like a Los Angeles. But so number five, New York. The article says, New York's highest praise, ironically, came from the member of the Boston Red Sox. Quote, it brings the best out of you. It's much different when you're taking the field against the New York Yankees than another team that isn't so popular with that much history. Close quote. Number four, Boston. Article says, as you might expect, the majority of Boston's admirers were all about playing at Fenway, it being MLB's oldest active ballpark, and of course, one of the rowdiest, an energy that was also subject to a lot of praise, but the city itself got plenty of love too, from the history buffs and more casual tourists alike. Number three, Toronto. One player in particular said, quote, it's the best city. If you ask around, I'm going to tell you, guys are going to say Toronto, especially if you've been in the league for a little bit, close quote. Number two, Chicago. The article says, quote, players weren't asked to specify in cases of multi-team cities which road trips they preferred, but in Chicago's case, opponents had the most to say about Wrigley Field. Quote, they came out, said an NL Central rival, an outfielder no less.
Mm-hmm.
They enjoy the game. Last year it was raining nearly 11 o'clock and they had a sold-out stadium. They weren't even in the playoff hunt, close quote. And number one, San Diego.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah, it's one NL third baseman said, quote, the infield surface, the weather, the stadium, the atmosphere, the city, you can't beat it, close quote.
Really no argument there.
No.
No, I mean, I know we like
to Toronto surprised me a little bit.
Toronto is kind of a little bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
I thought, well, you know what, I'm so used to Vegas now being involved in there.
Yeah, well, we'll see if that happens.
I think that'll change a little something up there.
Yeah, that's if they make it.
That is true if they make it. I'm surprised Baltimore wasn't in there, too.
Did get some votes.
Yeah.
So the article does go on to mention also receiving votes Anaheim, Arlington, Atlanta, Baltimore, Cleveland, Denver, Houston, Kansas City, Los Angeles, Miami, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Seattle, St. Louis, Tampa, and Washington, D.C. To the person who voted Tampa, I'd like to have a conversation with you.
Well, like I said,
nothing against the Rays, but that stadium, oof.
Yeah, that's a whole different ballgame there, uh-huh. Folks. But yeah, no, I mean, obviously baseball season kicking off next week. We'll be talking about that a little more in-depthly on next week's episode.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we'll have to wait a time there because, well, it is a certain time of year, folks.
Is that David Barrett I hear?
I think so.
One shining moment.
Yes.
Let's not forget the 1 year... I forget who it was. There was a guy who used to report for ESPN, live streamed himself singing that song.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, when you hear One Shining Moment and you know it is that time of the year where somebody is handing out brackets,
uh-huh.
It can only mean one thing. It's the men's and women's NCAA basketball tournaments.
If you work in an office cubicle, double check your coworkers. Odds are they're not doing work.
Yeah, allegedly.
Allegedly.
The most skipped day of work the entire year is Thursday. When the games kick off.
Yeah.
So I'm not, now granted, I'm not snitching anybody out.
No, I did get asked if I'm working Friday.
Yeah. I did have somebody ask me about that too. Like, are you going to be here Friday? I'm like, Lord willing. Yeah.
Yeah. Though I had a similar response.
Yeah. I mean, if my team was in this, I'd probably have more of a, you know, interest to say maybe I would have requested it off.
Your team's in it.
Well, my team is in it, but you know, like I say, this is not exactly a dominant year for Duke.
That's true.
So I'm not sitting there going like, you know, the warm and fuzzies, so to speak.
Sure.
So I definitely am. I'm feeling confident, but not as much because
sure.
As we kind of break down the brackets here very quickly, I mean, what's jumping out to you, Pat?
We'll start off in the what the hell division is this? I can't even tell.
The East. We'll go to the East.
Yeah, we'll go to the East. Listen, this division is fucking ridiculous because you got the number one seed in this division, and I think they're the number one seed
overall
is the UConn Huskies. I forget what it is, but there's like four or five other conference tournament winners in this bracket alone, which is fucking ridiculous. It's clear cut for me. I think the UConn Huskies are going to come out of this division. It's going to be a race between them and Iowa State for me.
Yeah, I have to agree with it. I mean, UConn has played at such a high level. Like,
yeah.
It's just one of those things that it's tough to pick against them, especially too in this day and age where, I mean, obviously we now live in a generation where you've seen a 16 beat a one.
That's true.
So it's not to say that UConn should run crazy, but you know, Dan Hurley's doing good things there. So
yeah.
You can't really exactly count them out. So I got to say, I think UConn does sneak out here, though I do really like Iowa State as maybe a sleeper.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that's the one thing. When you start getting into the later rounds, I mean, this is one thing that anything can happen if some team jumps out there. Like, I could see a San Diego State knocking out UConn.
The one thing I will say in this division or this bracket you want to look out for, potential upset, you got the number 10 seeded Drake taking on Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
Thing I heard today, is that this game is being played like an hour, maybe an hour and a half away from where Drake's campus is.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, they're playing the Washington State Cougars, who are having to come because this game is being played in Omaha, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the Washington Cougars are having to come like halfway across the country.
Yeah.
So, hey, a little bit of home cooking, you know. Drake doesn't necessarily have to show up, you know, a couple days before. They can roll in the day of, because the game's not until, 10:05 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah.
You know, they can roll in day of and get some home cooking that day.
This is very, just very saying. True. This is very true.
Just saying. Then you're looking at the Western Conference. Number one seed in this bracket is the North Carolina Tar Heels. I know that pains you to hear.
It does.
We will see who they play. They got one of the winners of the play-in, first four, I should say, awaiting them. A couple other interesting matchups. You got Michigan State taking on Mississippi State. Alabama's in there. Roll Tide. You got Clemson's in there. Baylor taking on Colgate. Dayton taking on Nevada. Arizona taking on Long Beach State. Could we see Long Beach State beat Arizona?
Possibly.
Anything's possible.
I would say this. I mean, as much as it pains me, I mean, Carolina got here.
Yep.
Reasons.
Yeah.
I never doubt out Tom Izzo at Michigan State. No matter what team he has, coaching does help in this situation. I could see them possibly upsetting Carolina, not trying to be a hater, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
I mean, this should be on paper Carolina's to lose.
Yep.
I mean, I don't want to say this is the weakest one of the four brackets, but in my opinion, I think this one is probably the most clear road to get there. So
there's not a lot of heavy hitters.
Barring anything super crazy happening, I could see a Long Beach State pulling an upset here.
Yeah.
But I could see a Baylor making a run too at three.
Yeah, what is it? I think I saw a couple people making the pick of Baylor going deep.
Yeah, Baylor's got a deeper roster than people realize.
Yeah.
They could make a run. It just, I mean, they do have an easy schedule, so to speak.
Yeah.
But you can't really rely on, like, you know, the upsets happening all the time. So
yeah.
I will say this. I think Carolina gets there, but I don't doubt Baylor as a sleeper.
Yep. Then in the Southern Division, you've got the number one seed is Houston. A couple other interesting matchups. You got Nebraska taking on Texas A&M. James Madison University's in there against Wisconsin.
That's my 12-5 pick.
Ooh, okay. Then you've mine too as well, by the way. Then you've got the Dukies taking on Vermont. Good luck, Vermont.
Yeah.
NC State taking on Texas Tech. Kentucky's in there against Oakland. Florida against a to-be-determined. And then Marquette taking on Western Kentucky.
This one is very, very stacked. I don't think people realize how deep this is.
Yeah.
Houston is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And their defense, if they show up and play, they're going to run away with this easily. It's not even going to be close.
Right.
This one, I love James Madison as a 12-5 pick. I really do.
I think
I think that James Madison people are sleeping on. In fact, I'm not saying they're going to beat Duke in the second round, but if it happened, I wouldn't be super shocked. Like, that's how much faith I think that they can step up to potential. And then looking at that lower half, I mean, between Kentucky, who as much as I'm not exactly a fan.
Sure.
They're loaded enough and they got healthy at the right time.
Yeah. So I figure Kentucky will at least make the Elite Eight. You know, because they should beat Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then they get the winner of whoever wins between Texas Tech and NC State. They should win that game.
Yeah.
You know, but then once you get to the Elite Eight, then it gets a little dicey.
Yeah, I mean, Florida could have made a run, but I know they just had an injury to one of their big guys.
Right.
So I think that is going to hurt them. This one, though, I'll kill a spoiler right here. I think Houston wins the whole thing.
Okay.
So I got Houston beating this.
Okay.
I think it's ultimately going to come down between them and Kentucky.
I could see
and
it.
That's going to be a hell of a game. I'm telling you right now. I'm excited for that one.
And then lastly, in the Midwest Division, you've got the number one seed is Purdue. They're going up against a team to be determined. Utah State's taking on TCU. Gonzaga's taking on McNeese. Kansas taking on Samford. South Carolina taking on Oregon. Creighton taking on Akron. Texas taking on, well, to be determined. And Tennessee taking on St. Peter's.
This one has the most potentials for low seed upsets.
Could be.
Than any other bracket.
Could be.
McNeese is not that bad, folks, as a 12-5 over Gonzaga.
Right, it's not bad, but also Gonzaga plays like coasting through the regular season.
Uh-huh.
You never hear anything crazy out of them in the regular season, and then come postseason, come tournament time, it's like, oh yeah, hey, we're Gonzaga, we're good.
Yeah. In fact, I wouldn't even doubt Stanford beats Kansas.
Ooh.
Kansas has not looked, they have not looked good this year. Bill Self has a good program, but they have not played up to potential.
Right.
I'm not doubting that that happens. And then you could see an Akron over Creighton at three.
I could see it.
You could. But I know I'm going to hear somebody give a big yell from the nerdy South, if you will. I think Tennessee beats Purdue.
Ooh.
To go to the Final Four.
Okay.
I truly do. I think Tennessee has enough weapons on offense. They can do it. And Purdue, I mean, a lot of people, the analysts as such, are picking Purdue to win it all.
Okay.
Listen, I they have a great chance. I haven't really seen the wow factor personally.
No. Purdue's always one of those teams, like in college football. They have a great regular season. They look awesome in the regular season. But then they get to postseason, and they just lay a goose egg.
Yeah, like I could see them getting to that final game, but I think Tennessee's got them. I think they're really going to step up and take that. And then, I mean, who you got winning the whole chip after all?
So in my Final Four, I have got, let me get that over there. I have got, come on, swipe, there we go. I've got UConn taking on Arizona, so a 1-2. And then I've got Kentucky taking on Purdue, so a 3-1. I've got UConn and Kentucky in the title game with UConn winning the whole thing.
So I got UConn and Carolina.
Ooh.
Getting there, even though I'm hoping I'm wrong. I really am. I'm hoping I sabotage my entire bracket.
Sure.
Duke Blue Devils forever. Unfortunately, though, not in this tournament. Listen, I think Houston is going to get there. Okay. Houston against Tennessee. Houston is going to win that one by 14 because they're going to put the Volunteers defense on ice or offense on ice. Sorry, Tyler. And then it's going to come down to Connecticut and Houston. And I like Houston. I really do. I think a great defense can shut down a really good offense. That's what you're going to see here. The game is going to be very, very close.
Yeah, well.
I think you're talking a difference of 4 points.
Ooh.
So to give the over.
That'd be a nail biter.
To give the over under, I say like 140.
Okay.
Like I think they're going to get up into around the 60, 65 range each.
Right.
Maybe the 70s. I will say that'll be in contention.
I say for the tiebreaker on ESPN, I did put as my tiebreaker, how many total points will be scored in the championship game? I said 154. Mm-hmm.
I mean, listen, it's quite possible, too.
Yeah.
And then the women's tournament very quickly.
What did Iowa do to piss them off?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Talk about it, Pad.
Oh, my Lord. Well, you got the women's bracket over there, and Iowa's got to go through, what is it, LSU, I know, is in the same bracket as them. There's a couple.
UCLA.
UCLA's in there. Yeah, Iowa's in there. They've got to go through potentially LSU, potentially UCLA, all in the same bracket. Good Lord.
Yeah, Iowa's got their work cut out for them. And that's, like I say, I think Iowa takes that bracket, but it's not going to be easy.
No.
On the flip side, you got South Carolina is the number one overall seed. I was kind of a little surprised at that, but listen, I'm not discrediting.
I haven't seen every game. I've seen a couple of games. They're really goddamn good.
Yeah, they're really good. I know, but you know what? I think ultimately they're going to have some tough competition coming out from, you know, Notre Dame could sneak in there.
Yeah.
I do like Oregon State. I know they're not getting a lot of hype right now.
Right.
But I could definitely see them give them some problems. But I think South Carolina is going to punch their ticket there. The other number one seeds are USC and Texas, respectively.
Yep.
I think Stanford, though, takes that bracket from Texas.
Uh-huh.
I think they wind up punching their ticket there.
Yeah.
And then in the other bracket, listen, don't sleep on Ohio State.
No.
Just going to say Ohio State has a good chance to upset USC in that. And then ultimately, I think no matter what, we get South Carolina versus Iowa.
Probably.
And that's going to be an insane game to watch. And
yeah.
I tell you what, I like Iowa.
I like South Carolina. South Carolina's got a lot of really stellar players. Also, since we're in the New York area, shout out Syracuse women. 6th seed?
Yeah.
Good for them.
I know. Hey, listen, that's the beauty of this time of year for the college basketball. No matter the men's or women's bracket, there's always going to be great games on. So definitely make sure you check your local listings where you can watch them. The games will be starting Thursday at noon Eastern Standard Time, so you definitely don't want to miss them as the tourney starts kicking off. The women's kickoff on the 22nd.
Yeah.
So definitely make sure to check that out, and we'll be recapping them as we go along because there's nothing like March Madness.
No. Case. And if you want to see some absurd stuff, go look at the NIT bracket and the records and where they got ranked in that bracket. I got some questions for those folks.
That blows my mind every time. I can't. I honestly, no disrespect to them, I can't do it because my head explodes.
No, I can't either. But I know, I think it was like Xavier or someone has a 16-17 record, but like they've got like a single digit ranking in that bracket. It's absurd.
Yeah, it's wild. But, you know, like I say, that's why we play the games. And it'll be fun to watch and be fun to recap as well. That being said, for anything and everything, it is the ODPH. You can find it at odphpodcast.com. That's it for this week in sports. So for the one and only Padawan J,
fuck the Astros.
I'm your host, Ken. Remember, fill out your brackets, folks. Thank you, as always, for listening to the ODPH podcast. We'll see you next time.
It's such a waste of time, swiping left and swiping right on people you could know. 'Cause anyone who's worth a damn be worth way more than a picture could ever show. You could find the right light, find the right angle, and never find your soul. And it can feel like a losing battle, and this plot is full of holes. This modern way of finding love just makes me feel so alone. And I can't be the only one sick of staring at my phone. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up, talk to me. Time fable, everyone has just one true love. All I know is you're across this table, and you're all I'm thinking of. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up, talk to me. Swiping left and swiping right on people you could know.